I promise to give her the message, and this promise cannot be violated. But Indra does not deserve to be killed. In these circumstances, the solution I have is quite suitable. Purport by His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada. Kashyapa Muni concluded, quote, Diti is eager to have a son who can kill Indra, since she is a woman, after all, and is not very intelligent. I shall train her in such a way that instead of always thinking of how to kill Indra, she will become a Vaishnavi, a devotee of Krishna. If she agrees to follow the rules and regulations, the Vaishnava principles, the unclean core of her heart will certainly be cleansed. Unquote. Chetodarpana Marjana. This is the process of devotional service. Anyone can be purified by following the principles of devotional service in Krishna consciousness. For Krishna consciousness is so powerful that it can purify even the dirtiest class of men and transform them into the topmost Vaishnavas. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement aims at this purpose. Narottam Das Thakur says, Rajendra Namanaya Satya Sutta Harasa Balaram Halalitai. The appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this Kali Yuga is especially meant to deliver the fallen souls who are always planning something for material enjoyment. He gave the people in this age the advantage of being able to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and thus become fully pure, free from all material contamination. One who becomes a pure Vaishnava transcends all material conceptions of life. Thus Kashyapa Muni tried to transform his wife into a Vaishnavi so that she might give up the idea of killing Indra. He wanted that both her and her sons be purified so that they would be fit to become pure Vaishnavas. Of course, sometimes the practitioner deviates from the Vaishnava principles and there is a chance that he may fall down. But Kashyapa Muni thought that even if one falls while practicing the Vaishnava principle, he is still not a loser. Even a fallen Vaishnava is eligible for better results, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Svapamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhagavat bhayat. Even practicing the Vaishnava principles to a small extent can save one from the greatest danger of material existence. Thus Kashyapa Muni planned to instruct his wife Diti to become a Vaishnavi because he wanted to save the life of Indra. Translation again. This is Kashyapa Muni's thoughts upon hearing the benediction, the ghastly benediction his wife wanted. I promised to give her a benediction, and this promise cannot be violated. But Indra does not deserve to be killed. In these circumstances, the solution I have is quite suitable. This chapter about the way that Diti, by her apparently very loving service to her husband, evoked his promise to fulfill her desires, and then hearing her express the motive in serving and pleasing in that way, he was mortified that her desire was to have a son who would kill Indra. So, contemplating that he could not violate his promise, it had to be fulfilled. But he had to protect her and himself, and ideally even the children, child, but it turned out to be plural, she desired, from being implicated in this ghastly offense, because Indra is not just a powerful demigod. He is, after all, a great devotee. He teaches us in so many ways by making so many mistakes, but that's not to his discredit. It's to prevent us from having to suffer similar consequences for similar results of pride, which is so prone to follow such a high position and great power and tremendous opulence. And as a Vaishnava, even though he makes many mistakes, Indra, he always comes back to the devotional service of the Lord, and therefore is a great teacher, is a great example to emulate in his always coming back to the service of Krishna, even when he deviates and falls in many ways. And is thus a precious teacher for us to honor and venerate and learn so many things to do as well as what not to do on the path of bhakti. So Kashyapa Muni was in a great dilemma. He promised to fulfill the desire of his wife, assuming that it was something desirable, and then hearing her inner motive, devised a plan by which everyone would benefit eternally, even if there were some discrepancies or fall downs along the path. So this is a story of an individual in a time long ago in a land far away. But it's also a story about each and every one of us here and now. It's a lesson on how to approach the worship of Krishna and seek his pleasure and blessings, even though we may be harboring so many selfish desires and improper motives, which are detrimental to ourselves, to our family, to our loved ones, to our Lord, and to the path of bhakti. But in this chapter, we see the wonderful redemptive potency of the path of bhakti, because bhakti is the Lord's purest form of his internal potency, the goddess of devotion, the Lord's own, the most pure essence of the Lord's internal potency, which is so powerful that even brings Krishna under her control. So pure is the love in the goddess of bhakti, that even Krishna himself succumbs to her will. So what to speak of the purifying effects the power of bhakti has on the individual jivas who are seeking to become purified. So this example of Ditti is meant to help us on the path of seeking the deepest fulfillments of our heart's desires. So, hearing her desire, Kashyapa Muni said, if you follow this vow, and he gave her a vow to follow for a year, in adhering to the Vaishnava principles, and ultimately that vow was meant to please the Supreme Lord Narayan in his internal energy, Lakshmi, by so many rules and regulations. And During that year, there was a lot of fear coming out. Indra came to serve his aunt Diti in disguise, and he was serving her so faithfully, apparently with so much love and devotion. But his motive was to find a discrepancy in her worship so that he could take advantage of that shortcoming to kill the child in her womb. And he was so fearful for that year because she was so strict in her following of the vow because of her motive to kill Indra. Whereas Kashyapa Muni was saying, all this time being very detached and very faithful, that whatever happens, the process of devotional service is eternal. The benefits of devotional service are eternal. The faults and failings of the jivas and all the horrendous consequences they bring are temporary in terms of the larger picture. So oftentimes we get so caught up in our own fears and failures and desires and motives that we lose sight of the larger picture. So, the Srimad Bhagavatam is so illuminating because it covers all ages and all prominent devotees of all the ages, and how in the end, by Krishna's mercy, they were successful in overcoming all obstacles and impediments, which really arise only from our own attachments and egotistic desires. Krishna works and he desires the upliftment of the whole. The living entity, due to the initial contamination of false ego, is so prone to think only of himself that he misses the ultimate story of God's love and his eternal yearning for the return of his lost children. So, Krishna gives us experience of family life and family affection, and he shows in his own pastimes how he cherishes a domestic role in loving relationships with his servants. And like a loving father who finds joy in and through his children and is always attentive to their well-being and inasmuch as they don't challenge his love and joy and agree to submit to the larger picture of loving relationships, then the whole family flourishes by rendering service to the whole. But by the madness of the effect of envy, even the supreme loving father, Sri Krishna, is challenged with being cruel and so heartless as to allow the sufferings which plague the living entities in this world. And as ungrateful children, we challenge his right and his superiority to do as he sees best. And we charge him with so many senseless accusations. And yet we see all around by the cycle of seasons and the bounty of the world how he's always providing for our legitimate necessities. And above and beyond that, he's always sending to this world, like the infinite stars in the sky, the venerable saints who try to purify our hearts, bring some darkness and some light, some guidance, some illumination into our darkened hearts and guide us back to the fulfillment of all our desires. And by the infinite arrangement and all the expressions of his love and kindness in this world, Krishna is treating the rebellious souls with small doses of suffering to try and redirect our misguided motives from harming us. So Srila Prabhupada is quoting Srila Narottam Das Thakur in this purport as far as the epitome of the Lord's mercy, that he has given us the holy name. The holy name of Krishna, the personal form of Krishna to worship, which is usually only awarded to the very most purified followers of our Nashram Dharma. But seeing that the Kali Yuga would be so troublesome, the Lord, out of his infinite kindness, love, and mercy, made an exception to his ordinary rule. As Krishna says, I never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent, but hide behind my curtain of yoga maya. It's interesting here. He uses yoga maya as a curtain which he hides behind. Because yoga maya is the internal energy of the Lord, which affects the union of the individual soul with Krishna. And here Krishna is saying, I hide behind that curtain from the assaults of the foolish, unintelligent, rebellious souls. So that curtain of yoga maya is the internal energy of the Lord, which has alternate features in regards to our own motives of how we want to surrender and serve the Lord or rebel and revolt against the supremacy. In that way, the world just we see the world according to our own motives. The external energy is meant to protect the devotees in their intimate loving dealings with the Lord by keeping the spiritual world so pure and so selfless that the conditioned souls remain bewitched by the external energy, which is really just a different feature of the internal energy. But the feature that the energy of the Lord reveals to us is according to our own desire. So, the internal energy of the Lord initially enlightens with realization of Vasudeva, who dispels all the darkness and doubts in the heart of the individual. But then, even that internal energy of the Lord proceeds to bewilder the living entities into believing and feeling and realizing that they have an intimate relationship with Krishna. You see, the Bhakti Lata Bija, the seed of devotion, is planted in the heart of the jiva by the arrangement of the infinite mercy of Krishna. By the mercy of Krishna, we receive Guru. And by the mercy of Guru, we receive Krishna. And together, they're working in our lives and our hearts to plant that seed of bhakti, which is nurtured by Shravanam Kirtanam. And by that nourishing process, that bhakti lata bija, likened to a creeper, begins to grow. But a creeper has no separate existence. It seeks the shelter of a tree. So it starts growing and searching and wandering and yearning for that tree. It's not to be found in the material world. So it comes to the Viraja River, Brahmaloka, where the three modes of material nature are in actual harmony and is very purifying. But there's still no shelter there, because where's the tree which the creeper wants to climb upon, seeking the fruits of its fulfillment, crossing beyond the Viraja, beyond Brahmaloka, it comes to Vaikuntha. and has the option of 2.5 rasas of loving relationship with Krishna. Passive reverence, servitude, and 1/2 a rasa of friendship. But in Vaikuntha, the rasa of Sakya is considered only 1/2, because it cannot proceed beyond the barrier of reverence. It cannot proceed into the sweet intimacy of confidential love. And some jivas are satisfied there, but others are not. And that bhakti-lata bija still yearning, still hankering, finding dissatisfaction even in the realm of Vaikuntha, proceeds further, seeking its ultimate fulfillment. Because what is the jiva really doing? What is the mind doing when it gets us in so much trouble? It's just seeking fulfillment. But it's not to be found in this world. The ultimate fulfillment is found only at the lotus feet of Krishna, where that bhakti-lata bija, embracing those lotus feet of Krishna and climbing upon that wish-fulfilling tree of Krishna's holy name and pastimes, finds the fruit for which it's ever yearning in the form of love of God. Harinam Chintaman. And then the creeper itself begins to manifest its own fruits in the form of compassion, which is manifest in preaching and distributing that same gift to others. In that holy land where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave birth to this Nam Sankirtan movement, there is a forest of wish-fulfilling trees named Belpakur. It's actually non-different from Dovavan of Braj. And long ago, a group of Shiva bhaktas were worshipping Lord Shiva there with the fruits of his favorite tree, the Bell tree. And at the culmination of their worship, Lord Shiva appeared to them and blessed them with the fulfillment of their various desires. But one of those devotees, Nimbaditta, who had been especially attentive in his worship of Lord Shiva, told him that you should go further in your quest. And nearby, in the same forest, your gurus are wrapped in meditation on the lotus feet of Krishna. And by serving them, you will attain all which is of value. So following the directions given by Lord Shiva, Nimbaditta he followed the illumination of the forest and found on a raised platform the four Kumaras wrapped in meditation. Very effulgent, very young, very noble in character and completely naked. And just so beautiful was the manifestation of the love in their countenance. He got so excited. He shouted, Hare Krishna! And that broke their meditation. And they opened their eyes and were so happy to see such a perfect candidate for the mercy of the Lord before them as Nimbaditta. And they all ran and embraced him one by one. And then Sanat Kumar explained to Nimbaditta that the Supreme Lord, seeing that this Kali Yuga would be especially troublesome, empowered four great souls to preach. Lakshmi empowered Ramanuja. Brahma empowered Madhva. Rudra empowered Vishnu Swami. And it is our great delight to instruct you, us four Kumaras who were previously absorbed in that sinful desire of absorption in Brahman, have been relieved from that offense, that obstacle, and elevated to the sweetness of the path of bhakti. And then Sanat Kumar told him to bathe in the holy Ganges and come back, and he would impart to him the Radha Krishna mantra and the sentiments of love, Bhava Marg. So, bathing in the river, coming back, taking initiation, worshipping Radha and Krishna by the mantra imparted by Sanat Kumar, at the fulfillment, at the completion of the perfection of his worship, the Supreme Lord, Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chanda, appeared there in that forest, the Bale Pakur, illuminating all directions with their effulgence. And Nimbaditya just fell prostrate, offering his prayers. And then, as Radha Krishna spoke to him, they're revealing their pleasure at his worship with great love and devotion. They revealed that in the Kali Yuga they would combine as one form. And there, before his eyes, Radha and Krishna merged into the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I've never seen such a form of the Lord as this. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that I will appear in the Kali Yuga to preach. And Nimbaditya was feeling, I want to preach and tell everyone about you. He said, no, you can't do that now. You can only preach the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the path of bhakti. And I reside happily in those topics. When my lila is manifest in the future, you will take birth again. And you will be famous throughout the land as the Digvijaya Keshavi, or Keshavakarshana, the conqueror of all directions. And by the mercy of Saraswati, you will have a benediction that whatever you speak, all the Vedic truths will be manifest from your tongue. And therefore, you will be undefeatable. No mortal being will have the power, the knowledge to defeat you. And you will just traverse the land, happily conquering all opponents. And then finally, as the fulfillment of the blessing of Saraswati, you will meet one very young, apparently arrogant pandit in Navadvipa Dham, and you will be defeated. Not by any mortal being, but by me in my childhood pastimes. And then, by the mercy of Saraswati, by the ultimate fulfillment of her benediction, you will give up all pride and take shelter at my lotus feet. So, and then you will preach the philosophy, Dvaita Dvaita. And then the Lord revealed to him that after that, I will myself take up the preaching. And I will take from the four foundry acharyas two essential teachings. From Madhva, I will accept his strong philosophy to defeat the Mayavadis and his teachings of the worship of the deity as an eternal entity. And from Ramanuj, I will take bhakti, pure bhakti, free from karma and gyan, and service to the devotees. From Vishnuswami, exclusive dependence on Sri Krishna and the path of Radha Bhakti. And from you, I will take back two of the essential teachings which I have imparted unto you, the necessity of shelter at the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, and the high esteem for the gopi's sacrifice and surrender and most pure service to Krishna. So, Nimbaditya, so eager to preach, but told that he could not reveal the upcoming appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that time, preached Dvaita Dvaita, very eager in pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Eager for the time when he would take birth again as the great pundit, the conqueror of all directions, Keshava Kashmir. So Keshava Kashmir, as we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita, traveled to all the centers of learning in Bharatvarsha. And he had a great reputation that wherever he came, he would defeat the greatest scholars in the six branches of Vedic knowledge, of which only one is Vedanta. And the etiquette at that time was a conquering, a pundit who was defeated had to surrender to his victor. So, conquering all these great pundits, Keshava Kashmiri had an incredible entourage of elephants, horses, chariots, and this huge wagon on which he piled all his certificates of defeat. Because whenever he defeated a pundit, he made him sign a certificate. You surrendered to me. And therefore, that mountain of signing certificates was just like symbolic of the mountain of pride that usually goes along with scholasticism. So he conquered all the great centers of learning, all the university towns, all the pundits, all the professors in Bharatvarsha, just as preparation for his victorious march into Navadvip Dham, which was the emporium of all learning and culture of the world. And when the word preceded him that the Digvijaya Pandit, the conqueror of all directions, was coming, normally the pundits of Nadia would not be in the least intimidated from a Digvijaya Pandit from afar. The problem is that they were so covetous of the benedictions of Saraswati, but they knew that he was her favorite chosen son who had given him the benediction that he could not be defeated by any mortal being. And the pundits realized that they were going to have to sign the certificates. And they could not bear the humiliation. So they just became so racked in fear that they couldn't even teach their disciples. And they were just thinking, what are we going to do? Where can we find the pundit who will preserve our dignity? And then when the students of Nimai Pandit came and told him that the whole city is racked in fear because of the victorious march approaching our city of the whole entourage of the Digvijaya Pandit, and everyone was so terrorized, they were amazed that Nimai Pandit, the young teenage professor of beginner grammar, student of beginner's grammar, who had also become a professor while he was still a student, began to smile. And he was obviously contemplating something deep within himself, which nobody could understand. How can he be so calm when our whole city is facing disgrace and ruination and the conquest of this Digvijaya Pandit? And then the Lord, that night, when he was instructing his students on the bank of the Ganges on the shore, and he saw that they were still so intimidated, he said, "A tree which is heavily laden with the most valuable fruits does not stand high in pride, but naturally bows down in humility and reverence." So, what do we have to fear from the pride of this Digvijaya Pandit? Have you not heard throughout the history of the world how Krishna, he doesn't like pride and ego, and he always invariably brings it down. Have you not heard the story of all the great conquerors of the world, Haihaya and Ashusha and all the rest? Krishna invariably brings down that pride and ego in the hearts of his living entities because it's so displeasing to him. And it's just disastrous for the jivas themselves. Because it creates their whole illusory world. A world based on their own selfish pleasure, where they themselves are the center, which in reality cannot exist. Krishna is like the sun. The jivas are just like the rays from the sun. They have no independent existence. Krishna is glorified as being holy, which is the roots of holistic and wholesome. He's concerned with the welfare of the whole, everyone, each and every part and parcel. And when the part and parcel begins thinking of himself exclusively, just to honor the free will, which is prerequisite to love, Krishna awards him the option of expressing and realizing the fruits of their free will in the material world, in which living entities come together and make coalitions based on similar desires and expressing their... But it's all so temporary because the three modes are always in competition. And whatever allegiances the jivas make for some temporal satisfaction, it's going to change, and the best friends become worst enemies, and the worst enemies become the best of friends. Anyway, when the Lord was instructing him, and it was a beautiful full moon night, and the rays of the beautiful moon over Nadi were reflected by the endless waves of the flowing Ganges, who dressed herself in the most graceful feature that night. And then as the Lord was very nonchalantly instructing his students, the dreaded arrival of the Divijaya Pandit, right in the middle of class. And the Divijaya Pandit, he offered his obeisances and prayers to the Holy Ganges, and we looked at this assembly of students of beginner's grammar. And for the first time in his life, he felt a kind of reverence and a little bit of fear in his heart. But the Lord, seeing him, invited him, "Please take your seat." And Divijaya Pandit came kind of nervously and he asked, "Is he?" "Oh yes, he is indeed the great Nimaya Nadi. Please take your seat." So he was feeling a little fearful. He never felt intimidated before. "What is this?" And he said, "So you're the great Nimaya of Nadi. I've heard that you're a great professor of beginner's grammar." And the Lord said, "Probably just exaggeration. I can't even really very well understand the beginner's grammar. But you, we've all heard about you. You're such a great pundit. And if you could bless us with your recitation of the glories of the holy Ganges, who descends from the toe of Lord Vamana, and flows throughout the material realm to purify the hearts of all conditioned souls. If we could hear a recitation of your propounding the glories of the holy Ganges, that would wash away the sins in our hearts and we would all be uplifted." And the Divijaya Pandit said, "Yes." And he proceeded to compose spontaneous Sanskrit verses in the praise of the holy Ganges, which was so eloquent that it was like a continuous roll of thunder from the clouds and just held everyone spellbound in rapt adoration. And the students were just saying, "Ram, Ram, this is phenomenal. His words are so eloquent and so rich with shining similes and mystical metaphors and eloquent allegories which they couldn't even follow." But they all knew for sure that they had never heard or experienced or seen such an exhibition of erudite scholarship as this. And after 3 hours, when that continuous roll of spontaneous Sanskrit verses, so poetical, so rhythmic, perfect bride and leader came to a culmination, and everybody was just spellbound and speechless in adoration. And were saying amongst themselves, who is this Devadatta pundit? It appears as if Saraswati herself has appeared on his tongue. And it was true. And then me, my pundit, responded, that was wonderful. And we would like to hear a continuation of the glories of your recitation. If you could just explain the faults in that one verse. And then he recited one of the verses, which impressed the Devadatta pundit. No one can understand my verses. How could you even have grasped one in your memory? Well, by the grace of Saraswati, one may be a great orator like yourself, and one like me just may have a good memory. So I also have a little mercy from Saraswati, so I remember your verses. But the thing I don't really understand, I needed to hear from you, is would you please explain the three mistakes in this, just one verse, the three mistakes. And he recited, and he explained, you made three mistakes in that one verse. And the Devadatta pundit was amazed. No one in the world has ever been able to really fully appreciate or understand my verses. But nobody ever imagined finding faults in my verses. And I never imagined anybody finding faults in my verses. But that's all right, Nibai encouraged them. Even the greatest pundits, even the greatest of all mortal beings, they have their faults. It's nothing to be discouraged about. So just please explain what you meant by making those mistakes. So he encouraged it. And the Devadatta pundit tried to explain. He tried to rationalize his mistakes. But Nimai pundit, every rationalization he made, he kept finding more mistakes in his explanation. And he said, well, you know, actually if you look deeply, we'll find infinite mistakes in your poetry. Devadatta pundit said, who is this boy? And he said, well, that's all right. You must be tired after such a display, after such a presentation, after such a show. So just go back to your lodge and take rest, and we can continue tomorrow. And then Nimai's students, they began to laugh. Because everybody likes, every conditioned soul likes to see the humiliation of some other proud person. They don't like to see them themselves, but they like to see them. So they start, and no. He maintained the respect for the pride and the dignity of this Devadatta pundit. And then the pundit went back to his room in his lodge, and his mind was just reeling. What is going on? How can this be when the benediction is of the gods themselves to be uncertain? Who is this boy? And Saraswati, why have you forsaken me? And when he was reciting her prayer, her mantra, and his mind was so deeply troubled and tormented, toward the end of the night, he fell into a slumber. And Saraswati herself appeared to him, illuminating all the darkness in his heart and revealing the fulfillment of her benediction. She said, the benediction I gave you was meant to go way beyond becoming a conqueror of this world. That would have been a totally vain benediction from me, because that boy pundit you met today is my Lord and Master. He is the Lord of all the endless universes. He is the source of all the avatars, like Lord Nishina, Akil, Hiranyakashipu, to give pleasure to Allah. He is the source of that Varaha who lifted the earth out of the depths of darkness and placed her back in orbit as a demonstration of how he would appear to lift the world out of the depths of ignorance in his golden appearance as Mahaprabhu. You today have met the Lord who is my master. But you always like to manipulate my words. You like to use my benediction to confront others. But my benediction, my words, will never be used to confront him. Because he is my master, I am his eternal maidservant. So now you have finally achieved the fruit of chanting my mantra. The fruit of all knowledge. The fruit of all everything is to surrender with utmost humility at his lotus feet. Because it is really the Sankirtan movement, which is the life and soul of all transcendental knowledge. And go beg that benediction from him. And he said, don't consider this to be a vain, ordinary dream. This is my true darshan and benediction to you. So the Digri Jayabhagat awoke in the morning. It was already morning. And he ran and fell prostrate at the lotus feet of Nimai Pandit. And the young professor, seeing some humble soul falling at his feet, picked him up and embraced him and said, it's you! And he got totally embarrassed. What are you doing, you great world conqueror, falling at the feet of this mere student of beginner's grammar? And Digri Jayabhagat said, don't try to bewilder me with those words. I know who you are. Saraswati revealed it to me this very night. And then the prayers which ensued from the depths of the heart of the Digri Jayabhagat are so illuminating as the fulfillment of all wisdom. And just to condense it into one very essential verse, the Digri Jayabhagat said, aside from what Saraswati told me, and I was supposed to keep confidential, was the fact that even though you defeated me 3 times, you won over my heart. I am the Digri Jayabhagat, the conqueror of all the pundits in all directions, the conqueror of all the university cities. But you won over the realm of my heart. You defeated me 3 times in public debate. But you preserved my dignity and honor and in my spirit. No one but the Lord could do that. And therefore, I'm coming to surrender to you as a fulfillment of all my benedictions from Saraswati. Because you always bless the helpless surrendered souls with your deepest compassion and mercy. And then when the Lord embraced him, the Lord's touch just completed the purification of his heart. And by that touch, renunciation as the inseparable companion of true wisdom appeared in the heart of the Digri Jayabhagat. And he went back to his entourage of so many servants and maidservants and horses and chariots and elephants and that big wagon with that big pile of signed certificates of defeat. And he just distributed it all to the poor and the needy. And he went off into the forest as a sannyasi. And the Lord had so much infused his heart with devotion, and all he wanted was to distribute the gift of transcendental knowledge. But the Lord told him, you can't tell anybody about this yet. You just preach. Dvaita, dvaita. And the Lord told him that, and the Lord did. It wasn't quite that time, but later on, after taking his initiation from Ishvara Puri in Bihar, the Lord himself, he did what he told Nibbidhika in that previous darshan. He took the essential teachings of all the 4 foundry acharyas. Those 4 foundry acharyas are like the first stars rising on the horizon as forerunners of the golden moon of Vinadhya. So, what we have to do when we get too isolated in our own stories of despair and defeat, is realizing and questioning, why is the Lord not responding? Why is He so cruel? Why is He waiting? I'm begging for His mercy. Where is it? You've got to understand, He's trying to take our own little stories of sorrow and pain and lift them into a larger story of sorrow and pain, in which great joy, in which great fulfillment is hidden. And therefore, preaching is the essential duty of one who acts. Because preaching means sharing the mercy, distributing the compassion which we received as the gift of Guru and Dharma. So, Keshava Kashmiri, he became a sannyasi. He just went out, but the Lord told him, you can't tell anybody about me yet. Preach pastime, talk of it, distribute that Krishna Katha, the pastime of Radha and Krishna, because I delight, I reside in those holy topics. As the gopis themselves said, when just a little drop of Krishna Katha enters one's ears, if the heart, if the portals to the heart are the least bit open, by the slightest tinge of humility, that Krishna Katha goes right into the heart. And it conquers the realm of the heart. And it makes that person so disinterested in anything of this world, tasting the slightest tinge of that utmost satisfaction of Krishna Katha. And what is it about Krishna Katha? When we're submissive, and we show a little inclination and eagerness, the Lord, in that form of transcendental sound, He enters our hearts, and He Himself takes upon Himself the cleansing process. All those anarthas which darken our hearts and are so impossible. Our own anarthas, which we have created by our own false ego, has created a barrier, a wall, which keeps us in prison in the material world. It's impossible for us to escape the prison which by our own misuse of the free will, the Lord has given us for the sake of love. We've imprisoned ourselves in walls so fortified, and it is beyond our ability to escape.